It is the city to be in when you are young.
I love it.
Lots of students, lots of young people, lots of cafes, lots of fun. An attitude in the city like, well, if you want to walk on your head, you walk on your head.
Amsterdam is the Sodom and Gomorrah of today. You can say that because when you walk down the streets and you find everything that is wrong available.
Amsterdam is very trendy.
Come and see for yourself.
World Service. BBB World Service.
BBC World Service.
You're tuned to London. You're tuned to London.
Megamix! Megamix!
Yes, indeed. Welcome to Megamix from Amsterdam here in Holland. I'm standing alongside one of the city's main streets, Keizergracht, which, like the rest of the central area of the city, is filled with rows of beautiful 17th century gabled houses, all leaning precariously against each other and all overlooking one of the city's many interlinked canals, which have given Amsterdam the nickname of the Venice of the North.
Hey, John, did you know there's 700,000 people living in Amsterdam?
Really?
And 550,000 bicycles.
210 trams.
100 canals.
And over 1,000 bridges.
Yes, well, in recent years, Amsterdam has become known as the European centre for youth culture, with young people flocking to it from all parts of the continent. Gary Bones met journalist Stephen Flay, who's lived in Amsterdam for 5 years, and asked him why so many young people should gravitate towards the city.
It has something for everybody here. Well, that applies to all ages, I guess, but especially for the young people. Perhaps the liberal attitudes are the main draw card here. Liberalism regarding the use of soft drugs, liberalism regarding freedom of expression, artistic. It just is one big magnet attracting people from all different races, all different creeds, all different cultures.
We're standing in Vondelpark in the center of the city. I gather this is something of an area where at weekends young people congregate. They congregate here not only in the weekends, but in cold weather, in warm weather. This was the place where the hippies came in the 60s, the Vondelpark. It was one of the places where they used to come. And you still got the spillover of the hippie era coming to this, the largest park in the Netherlands almost. And it's also a scene of artistic happenings. There are outdoor concerts going on just about every day, free concerts.
The young people of Amsterdam, how do they spend their free time? We're standing here and people are jogging past us. They seem to be a very fitness-orientated race, but what else do they do?
Oh, not everybody. You'll find a lot of the people here just sitting in cafes and having a drink of coffee and watching other people watch them. A lot of young people also go to sporting fixtures, great football fans over here. When it's cold, I mean, the Dutch just don't sit inside and try to keep warm. They go out skating, all ages, right from the very, very young to the very, very old. And then there's the other side of things, the liberalism, where the young people congregate in the coffee shops, about 500 of them here in Amsterdam.
You've lived in Amsterdam for some years now. Is there something of a Dutch national characteristic? I mean, do the people have a sort of unique characteristic, or are they considered to be just Europeans these days?
No, the Dutch have a typically Dutch characteristic of being different from one another, individuals. The children, when they go to schools here, they don't have to wear uniforms, most schools, that is. But they're taught to make their own decisions when they're very, very young, or it perhaps is also born in them. They say, one Dutchman, you have one Dutchman, two Dutchmen, a political party.
The tolerance of the Dutch is known around the world. Is this something that's spreading right throughout the youth element, and the young people that are growing up, are they as tolerant as their parents?
The young people, as with young people everywhere, seem to go through this rebellious stage. I wouldn't say it's tolerance with young people. It's just individualism, being different to everybody else. The tolerance, perhaps, stems from the suffering these people have had. First of all, at the hands, say, of the Spanish many centuries ago, then the Germans.
Can you tell us a little bit about the political system within the country? You say, okay, two Dutchmen and you've got a political party. It's not really like that. What is the political situation?
It's quite a diverse situation. We have had for many years a coalition government of Christian Democrats and Liberals. Well, in the past 8 years I've known it, they have been re-elected with flying colours, the present government, although it's quite a sizable opposition made up of the socialists, plus many smaller parties. But the most interesting thing is, and this has got a lot to do with young people, is that for the first time, I think, almost anywhere in the world except for Iceland, they have started a women's party. And the country, by tradition, has got very, very strongly held religious beliefs. You'd be surprised that even the pressure groups outside the city of Amsterdam haven't brought around a sort of a clean-up campaign within the city with respect to the red light district, with respect to drugs. How do they seem to have these double standards? You've got to remember one thing, and this might sound a little bit hard on my host country, because I've lived here for 5 years, but the Dutch, at heart, are a trading nation. And whether it be sex or drugs or jet aeroplanes, it's a commodity to many of the Dutch.
Not only a trading nation, but also a very tolerant nation. That's what the Dutch are most famous for. In fact, Amsterdam is a very cosmopolitan city with an ethnic mixture of people created by both liberal immigration laws and influxes of people from former Dutch colonies like Suriname. There are 125 nationalities all living in harmony in the city. Racism or discrimination of any sort is an offence. However, this tolerance on the part of the Dutch has not only given Amsterdam a very friendly image, but as Stephen Flay hinted, also something of a darker side, because it appears to have become Europe's sex and drugs capital. The city's red light district, which has been in operation since the 16th century, is located in several streets near the central railway station, and the latest Dutch government figures estimate that Amsterdam sadly has around 8,000 full and part-time prostitutes, 50% of which have come from the developing countries of Africa and Southeast Asia. Many also come from Holland itself, like Jansen, who's only 19. Catherine Russ asked her how she has come to be working as a prostitute.
I was 15, I go from home away. The first year I live on my own, but then I have no money anymore. I must work. I have a boyfriend and he said, go work. I said, first, no, I don't. And later I go, yeah.
Do your friends do this as well?
No, but they said, you can do what you want, but I don't want to see you in the window.
When people ask you what you do in your life, can you tell them easily living here?
No, I don't talk about it.
No, it's not. So what do you say you do?
I work in a coffee shop.
Yeah, really? Is this something that was easy for you to do?
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
The first time, you think I'm bad. Yeah. But then you go live, 5 minutes, it's ready.
Catherine Russ talking to Jansen, a 19-year-old Dutch girl who's chosen to become a prostitute in Amsterdam. In Holland, prostitution itself is technically not illegal. However, the management of prostitutes, which the Dutch see as exploitation, is against the law. Dr. Jan Visser leads a government-funded research project into prostitution, and Gary Bones asked him if he was happy with the law as it stands in Holland.
Well, actually, no. We propose to change the law in that respect, that we make a sharp distinction between voluntary prostitution and involuntary prostitution, because at the moment, the prostitutes don't have any rights as a prostitute. They can have rights as human beings, but then again, they are so stigmatized that they don't appeal for their rights in such respect. When the management of prostitution that is voluntary, there is a voluntary contract between a prostitute and a brothel owner or a sex club owner or any other person in the sex industry, then if that would be legal, then there are all kinds of laws and regulations concerning labor law can be put into effect, and the city can give out license to those kind of brothels and attach conditions regarding safety and hygiene and the inner structure of the building so that they have sound working conditions.
Some people might say in response to that, some people with maybe strong morals, by doing that you're going to encourage even more widespread prostitution throughout the city, throughout Holland. What would you say to that?
We don't expect that it will increase prostitution as such. We think that the problem might arise when the involuntary prostitution will still exist, for instance, illegal women, which will go underground because they cannot work in legal prostitution settings.
Can you just explain to us a bit more about what you mean by involuntary prostitution?
Yeah, involuntary prostitution is, for instance, women who are forced into prostitution by men or by a criminal organization, so totally against their will, and a lot of the money that women earn goes to these men.
Gary Bones talking to Dr. Jan Visser about his research into the problems of prostitution in Holland.
It is apparent from any of the young Dutch people that I've met that there's only a small percentage who condone prostitution here in Amsterdam. I came across one group of young Dutch people who offer help to those who found themselves caught up in the sex industry. Victory Outreach is just one of a number of new Christian evangelical churches in Holland. All of its members are trained by Mission for Youth, an American foundation based in Amsterdam. Victory Outreach imposes strict discipline on its members, but still manages to attract large numbers of young people. Many of its members are reformed drug addicts and prostitutes like Christine.
Victory Outreach is a church for everybody, but we specialize with down and out people that nobody else wants to work with. I mean, when you have people from off the streets, and you know, it could be a murderer, a drug addict or whatever, you go into a normal church and you start digging into somebody's life, you are going to have problems. And today, most of the churches do not want that kind of problem. I mean, to sit up with a drug addict all night, two, three nights, have them throwing up all over your floor, sleepless nights, praying with them, and for them to you invest your time and for them to possibly walk out, not many people want to do that. And that's why the church is like the way it is, because of the people, the characters that they have. They feel, you know, what a prostitute feels. They feel what a drug addict feels.
If we could just sort of step aside from this particular church and look at the question of the city itself. There's a very liberal view to drugs. There's a very liberal view to sex in this city, which I've never encountered before. Do you think that by putting temptation in people's way, that people are tempted?
Well, you could say that Amsterdam is the Sodom and Gomorrah of today. You can say that, because when you walk down the streets and you find everything that is wrong available, of course the temptation is greater for the ones. You see, the Amsterdammers are not really, let me share this, the Amsterdammers are not the ones that are into drugs so much. You will find most of the drug addicts here are foreigners, because in their own country they're not allowed to do it. And you will find most of the women, the prostitutes, are foreigners.
Anybody who's listening to this who might be in a situation where they feel that they are down, they're in a rut, they feel as though their life is out of control, can they just come to this church and say, help me?
That's what we're all about. They can come. We go out evangelizing. We have a sunrise ministry that's out on the streets 4 o'clock in the morning. And we don't wait for the people to come to us. We go and get them. We reach out. That's the name of the church, to reach, to strain ourselves, to let people know that if they need help, there is a place for them to go.
So Christine found safety and salvation at Victory Outreach Evangelical Church. But a young drug addict called Mark, who I met and who'd been to their meetings, had a very different point of view.
They put the pressure on you that only God can save you if you want to get off the dope. That's not true. I mean, you must also have sport, and you must not stay in there the whole day praying. That's not the way you get off drugs.
Mark is just one of the many young people living on the streets of Amsterdam. But this is not a unique problem, as Catherine Rust discovered.
As in many European cities, one of the main problems which young people have to contend with is being able to find a suitable place to live. With the exorbitant rents you need to live centrally, many are forced to live in squats. Squats are derelict buildings taken over illegally by young people. Several years ago, a squatters' movement which aimed to resist eviction by the authorities was formed. The problem came to a head recently with ugly scenes between squatters and riot police. Since then, the Amsterdam City Council has worked very hard to house a lot of these people. One man who's been around since the squatters' movement started, Norbert van Rooy, told me the movement is far from dead.
There's still pirate radio for squatters, and there's still newspapers, and there's still pubs, nightclubs, and there's still a lot of squats in Amsterdam. At the moment, it's still the same problem. But a lot of squats have been legalized, and another group a very big group of Scots have been teared down. So the problem hasn't been solved.
So with the government tearing down a lot of these houses and building new ones, what are young people doing to find places to live?
Well, the situation in Amsterdam becomes the same kind as in Berlin. In Berlin, they had in 1984, I think, some big riots. So they decided to, in 1 year time, legalize all squats, and the squats they didn't legalize, they would tear down. So at this moment, I believe there's only one squat at checkpoint Charlie left, and that's it. Here in Amsterdam, they use the same, exactly the same strategy.
Je luistert naar Radio De Vrije Keizer in samenwerking met de Staatsradio op de 96.2 FM. Telefoon tijdens uitzending 881914.
Radio plays an important role for squatters, as Norbert said. Radio Frankhauser is one of two illegal or pirate stations which broadcasts from a squat specifically for squatters. And I asked Jan, who helps operate the station, what their aims are.
To communicate and to give information what's happening from if there's been houses caught, if they're coming actions on, and we give them information how to look out.
Yo, Willie!
He's back.
Radio Veronica, which years ago itself was a pirate station, is now the country's most listened to legal station, playing pop on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Jeroen van Inkel works for Radio Veronica, and he's one of the country's top DJs. I asked him which country influences their style of broadcasting most.
From the US, no doubt. If you take a look at, for instance, the jingles, the promotional bits we play during our program, they are produced in America. They are very up-tempo, very aggressive. And that's more or less the New York way of making radio. We listen to lots of tapes from, for instance, Z100, Power 95.
You have a lot of Dutch music on the charts. You even have one at number one at the moment. Why do you think we don't hear about it more?
Well, there's, of course, the language barrier. If I would sing a song in your country, which went like, Alles kan een mens gelukkig maken, that sounds funny, does it? And I think in a country so big as the UK, there's so much music, there's enough music to keep everybody satisfied without having to look to other countries.
How about young people in Amsterdam? Who do they like to listen to?
Amsterdam is very trendy. I used to work for a radio station called Decibel Radio in Amsterdam, which was a real trendy radio station. And the music we played on that radio station was very different from the music the radio stations played for the entire country. If you take a look at Amsterdam right now, they're into acid and new beat. That's a type of music from Belgium, which is very downbeat type of music. They're into the more trendy type of music. So the Amsterdam market is real different from the other cities.
With so many stations here doing all kinds of music, I'm assuming your competition must be pirate stations. How different are they from you?
They're not really that different. They have one very good thing, which we don't have, is that they can mainly broadcast 24 hours a day on the same frequency. People can leave their radio on their frequency and listen to them and wake up with them and go to bed with them, for instance. What we have and what they don't have is, I think, we make better programs than they do because we have a selection of all those people who used to work for all the pirate stations in Holland, and they now work for Veronica or for other broadcasting companies on Radio 3. And I think this selection of people is probably the best of all those stations.
Aside from working as a DJ on Radio Veronica, Jeroen also hosts a television Top 20 program. Just looking at the charts, it's quite evident the Dutch music industry is thriving with artists like Jan ten Hoopen, Roxette, and André Van Down all in the Top 20. Even the number one for the past few weeks, which I mentioned earlier to Jeroen,
has been the Dutch duo René Froha and Huda Doel with Alice Kahn en Mens.
Ik kan niet zeggen dat ik iets tekort kom. Geen idee, geen benul wat de smaak van honger is. Als ik geen zin heb om te koken, dan loop ik even naar de markt voor een moot gebakken vis. Als ik morgen geen zin heb om te werken, dan stel ik al het werk tot overmorgen uit. En als de kleuren van mijn huis me irriteren, dan vraag ik of de buurman het vandaag nog overspuit. Een eigen huis, een plek onder de zon. En altijd iemand in de buurt die van me houden koopt. Toch wou ik dat ik net iets vaker, iets vaker simpelweg gelukkig was.
The current Dutch number one by René Froha and Huda Doel. Now, perhaps the most famous young person ever from Amsterdam was Anne Frank, whose house in the city has now become a museum, as well as the headquarters of an organization called the Anne Frank Foundation. Joke Niesmeyer runs the foundation, and she talked to Robert Palmer.
Anne Frank was a girl of four when she had to flee Nazi Germany in 1933 because she was Jewish. She came from a Jewish family. They fled to Amsterdam. They lived a rather peaceful life right up till 1940, when the German armies invaded Holland. And in 1942, when the persecutions of the Jews started in Holland as well, the Frank family decided not to await further developments, but go into hiding. Unfortunately, in 1944, the family was betrayed, we don't know who, by whom. And Anne shared the faith with many other millions of Jews and died in a concentration camp. But of course she became famous because of her diary that she wrote during the 2 years in hiding.
But the name Anne Frank has lived on since her death, and now there is an Anne Frank Foundation as well. What does that foundation do?
Well, first of all, we try to inform the visitors and youngsters at school and everybody who was interested. We try to tell them what actually happened between 1933 and 1945. We try to give information about what is the Nazi ideology like. How is it possible that so many people thought that that was a good idea? They voluntarily voted for it.
But do you think it's worth dragging up the past and remembering what happened? Wouldn't it be better just to sort of to leave it alone?
The victims would deserve better than that. But on the second point is, you know, Germany in the beginning of the 30s was what you might call a civilized country. And if you see, you know, what people were capable of in under certain conditions, under certain political, economic and social conditions, that they were capable, normal citizens, in the end, turned to mass murder. I think that's kind of frightening. And I think it's a warning to each and all of us. We're not born with all ideas about decency and good human relationship. You have to learn about them. And you also have to learn about what can go wrong.
Could you ever see there being another fascist uprising?
That's very hard to predict. But then, on the other hand, you know, nobody thought in the 20s that what happened in the 30s and 40s would ever be possible. What you see is, as soon as people, you know, start accepting that somebody else's rights are violated, that they turn a blind eye. That is the main factor in conditioning getting worse.
So you're saying those that remain silent consent?
Yes, I think that the majority of the people should make it clear that they don't accept the fact that minorities are being maltreated, are being discriminated against.
That was Joke Niesmeyer from the Anne Frank Foundation talking to Robert Palmer. I actually visited Anne Frank's house yesterday, and when I went there, I couldn't help but feel sad at how cruel mankind can be. This museum is a stark reminder of how the people of Amsterdam were treated at the hands of the Nazis during the Second World War. Nowadays, Anne Frank's house on Prinsengracht is one of the city's major tourist attractions. It's the job of the Amsterdam Tourist Authority to promote the city, and Gary Bones spoke to their public relations manager, Odette Tamignal. He first asked her how difficult it was to sell a city whose reputation is linked with sex and drugs.
Tourists love it. If we could publish it on the front of our brochures, then we would have more tourists as we have now. Because it still is, it's in a very secluded area. If you don't want to see it, you don't have to go there. And it is way different from Soho in London or the Reeperbahn in Hamburg.
Right, a young person arrives at Central Station here in Amsterdam. Where can they go? What can they see?
First of all, I would advise them if they've come with a rucksack or a backpack, you know, and they don't know where to stay yet. Right outside the railway station is our office, the information office, which is open all summer till 11 o'clock at night, so you never have to be afraid you're stranded. Get yourself a map and an Amsterdam what's on, and then go find your bed. And then I would say hit the town by... first thing you ought to do is making a canal ride. It's a nice way to see the city in an hour by the water. You don't have to watch traffic and bicycles and all kinds of other means of transportation. And the interesting things that you've seen on the boat, you may stroll back to. And then once you're off the boat, maybe you're ready for a nice bite to eat. And I must say, in Amsterdam, there is so many restaurants and cafes and pubs and good meals for little money. You can sit there and people watch. And I think Amsterdam is an extremely good city for people watching.
If you want to get a feel of what Dutch life is like, presumably the places not to go are the coffee shops right in the city centre. I mean, what areas of the city, if you want to really get in touch with Dutch life, what areas do you go to?
Go through the little narrow labyrinth of streets that you will find behind the main canals. And a very nice area to go to where you find lots of locals is the Jordaan area. It comes from the French word jardin, you know, garden. Mm. And that is a real nice little area where many locals live.
Getting around the city, what's the best way of doing that?
If I were a tourist that would be here for a couple of days, say 2 or 3 days, I would get myself one of these passes that you only have validated once, and then you are free to travel on any tram, bus, or metro.
I noticed you didn't mention bicycles there. Everywhere I go, I've been almost mowed off the streets by bicycles. Why did you not suggest people take a bicycle?
It's a lot of fun, a bicycle in Amsterdam, and I forget it probably because to me it is such a normal way of getting about.
What's your own favorite part of the city?
Well, the favorite part of the city where I live is in the museum area, because I happen to live there. That's what's my favorite area. But I think also that the tourists would like that because there's the Modern Art Museum, the Rijksmuseum, the Van Gogh Museum, the Concertgebouw. There's beautiful shops in that area. Amsterdam is such a small, walkable city, and everybody speaks English. May you have turned a wrong turn, people are there to set you on the right track. So I would stay away a bit from the central station area, which are melting pots of all kinds of things anyway, all over the world.
We haven't talked yet about the nightlife.
Depending on what they like, of course, we have a lot of these brown cafes, as we call them, and those are cafes that are only called brown because the interiors are so brown and usually out of wood and the sand on the floor and little wooden tables and things. That is where youth goes that doesn't like loud music, because there's very seldom loud music and a lot of people talk there. But if you're into swinging and dancing, I mean, we have jazz cafes, an abundance of them. We have lots of discos that usually charge an entrance fee, but are open on weekends till 3 or 4 in the morning. I mean, you can party all night long in Amsterdam.
Yes, Odette is quite right. There is a magical air about this place once the sun has gone down. Amsterdam has a unique beauty all of its own. Call me a soppy, wet romantic, but the city has an amorous feel about it. The canals are tailor-made for whispering sweet nothings into the ear of the one you love. Well, whilst you fight back the tears, I'll finish by saying that if you ever get the opportunity to go to Amsterdam, grab it with both hands. The Megamix team were very impressed, and the city, ultimately, is what you make of it. A bit like life, really. This has been Megamix from Amsterdam. Right now, we're off back to London, and I'll leave you in the capable hands of Mr. Elvis Costello with his interpretation of Amsterdam, New Amsterdam.
You said that you mistaken for lyrics. You give me your lip at the function distillery. You turned my head till it rolled down your brain chain. Does I have it? Step on the brakes to get out of the clutches. Till I speak.
New Amsterdam by Elvis Costello. And Megamix this week was produced by Gary Bones and Catherine Russ. And you can hear another edition at the same time next week, introduced by Sybil Rusco.